Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Hello and welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we're back with Season 2, Episode 5, The Balance. This episode continues the Cadmus arc and picks up directly with the theft of the Annihilator armor from the previous episode. But more importantly, it deals with the rift between two of the original Seven Leaguers that has been festering since Starcross. So let's jump into it. The Balance originally aired May 28, 2005. Story by Stan Berkowitz. Teleplay by Dwayne McDuffie. Directed by Dan Ribba. With music by Lolita Ritmanis. In the cast, we had Maria Canales as Shiera, Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, Carl Lumley as John Jones, Michael Rosenbaum as Flash, Robert Englund as Felix Faust, Bob Joles as Hades, Juliet Landau as Tala, Jason Bateman as Hermes, Wayne Knight as Abnegazer, Susan Sullivan as Hippolyta, and Michael T. Weiss as Jason Blood.
Tala tries to use her magic to lift the vulnerability from the Annihilator armor. During the process, she is critiqued and chastised by the spirit of her old mentor, Felix Faust. After Faust's body was destroyed in a botched deal with Hades, Tala found his spirit and trapped it in a mirror. Faust tricks Tala into freeing him, and he takes possession of the Annihilator, leaving Tala to take his place in the mirror. He storms out of Cadmus' headquarters, literally hell-bent on revenge.
On the Watchtower, Flash tricks Wonder Woman and Shiera into sharing a meal to bury the hatchet between them. The two refuse and leave Flash at the table. Diana then notices Jean struggling with an agonized Jason Blood caught between his human and Etrigan forms. Dr. Fate and Satana are also in incredible pain. Jean leaves to research how to help their mystical members, while Diana finds a visitor in her room, the messenger to the Greek gods, Hermes. Hermes tells Diana of how Faust had invaded Tartarus and dethroned Hades, throwing the cosmic balance of chaos and order off. Zeus commands Diana defeat Faust and place Hades back on the throne of the underworld.
Knowing it can disrupt magic, Diana sneaks into Shiera's room and attempts to borrow her mace. Shiera refuses to let it go without her, so the two set off for Diana's home of Themyscira. There they find Diana's mother, Queen Hippolyta, and her Amazons trying to block demons from escaping Tartarus. Hippolyta reminds Diana that she had been banished from her home island by the gods, but Diana declares that she is going to stop Faust. Hippolyta tells her she is going to do this, she must have her full power. By touching her tiara, Hippolyta unlocks unknown powers in her bracelets, girdle, and lasso. Diana and Shiera fly into the underworld.
After fighting off some demons, the heroes argue about whether to stop Faust or free Hades first. Diana refuses to help Hades, despite what her mission is. Shiera tells her they'll need Hades' help to defeat Faust, but Diana says she doesn't need anyone's help, even Shiera's. Despite this, Shiera backs her play to go after Faust. They spot a demon named Abnegazer, and Diana intuitively knows to use her now magic lasso to make him tell the truth where Faust is and how to get there. They find him in Hades' library, ecstatic over the ancient tomes and knowledge he now has access to. Having no time for a throwdown, Faust waves his hand and sends them plummeting through a portal into a snowy wasteland.
There they find and free Hades, who takes them back into the library. Shiera begins burning Faust's precious books, distracting him so that Diana and Hades can attack. Diana tells Faust she knows of the armor's weakness. If they don't fight back, it will stop. But Faust boasts he removed that vulnerability and takes down both Hades and Diana. Shiera uses her magic disrupting mace to damage the armor, but Faust begins to squeeze the life from her, causing her to drop the mace. Diana picks it up and uses it to smash the armor, causing it to explode.
Shiera awakens to find a worried Diana over her. Hades says although he lost his library, he's gained a new hobby, torturing Faust's soul for all eternity. He repeatedly calls Diana my child, which makes her threaten to do to him what she just did to Faust. He then tells her that he is her father, having helped Hippolyta sculpt the clay figure that the queen later gave life to. Shiera says they could prove he was lying if they used the magic lasso on him, but Diana says it doesn't matter. She knows who raised her and what she was raised to do. The two return to Themyscira to the cheers of the Amazons and the thanks of Hippolyta, who admits she was stubborn and should have unlocked Diana's full powers a long time ago. Despite her banishment, she invites Diana and Shiera to stay for a meal and is willing to deal with the gods if they have a problem with it. Diana asks Shiera if they are okay now, and Shiera tells her they are like oil and vinegar. They go together, but don't mix. The two fly off together. So in this opening scene, which initially looks like to be set in some kind of castle dungeon, we learn that Tala is developing a potion to take away the Annihilator's vulnerability. Of course, Task Force X delivered the Annihilator to Tala and Amanda Waller in the previous episode after stealing it from the Justice League Vault.
Right.
And just in case you missed the last episode.
Gotcha.
So, and she's getting snarky critiques on what she's doing from her magic mirror, but that's not just a Disney ripoff. It's the spirit of Felix Faust.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Faust is once again voiced by Robert Englund, best known as the nice alien visitor who sided with the Resistance in V. Oh, when he played some minor horror figure named Freddy Krueger, too.
Yeah.
He was also in Stranger Things, season 4.
Uh-huh.
In a minor but critical part.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wish he was in it more, actually. Yeah but Faust was, we learned that Faust was Tala's teacher, but apparently, according to her, she'd know more if they'd
spent more time on the curriculum and less time,
Yeah. She doesn't finish that thought, but She's got it bad, She's hot for teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the hellish things they deal with, she's really hot for teacher.
So, him, Gorilla Grodd, no, or was it Ultra Humanoid? Gorilla Grodd, Lex Luthor, Flash.
Yeah, I don't want to skip ahead too much, but we later learn in season 3 that Tala is drawn to men of power, and she basically throws herself at whoever is the top dog in a situation. So she went after her professor, or at least gave in to his advances. So, there you go. So, make of that what you will. I always find it interesting that Tala never has shoes on. You ever notice that?
Yeah.
She's barefoot all the time.
But you have to think, too, that she's also a witch, so she's connected to nature.
Okay.
So that's...
Okay. The potion goes poof in the drawn mystic circle around the Annihilator, and Faust chides her, despite the fact that she went to Tartarus and gathered his mortal remains after the events of the Justice League Season 1 episodes Paradise Lost Parts 1 and 2. Which, if I remember right, we really liked those episodes. Mm-hmm. They were standouts from that first season.
Yes.
Yeah, they were a lot. They were like, oh, that was a pleasant surprise. We forgot how good those were.
Except they had that one scene where it was just, it kept repeating.
They had the one scene, I think what you're thinking, it was the one scene where it's lifted from Superman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah,
where Flash
comes
running straight at the camera. And he's supposed to be in the underworld or under Paradise Island, Themyscira, and he's there's a computer bank behind him.
Because
they just lifted it from the Weather Wizard's headquarters. Tala tells him that without her spell, his spirit would have been lost in the winds. Instead, she trapped it in the magic mirror. Even Faust has to agree it's better than the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Faust then taunts her with how to solve her problem, so she finally says,
"Are you going to tell me, or just keep tormenting me?"
In a very Bela Lugosi-style accent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do we think of Tala and Juliet Landau's vocal performance? Is it too broad, or is it just fun and not taking any of this too seriously? What do you think?
I don't think it just fits the character. It's fine.
Okay. I just thought the way she said it, though, "You're going to keep tormenting me." It's just like, I mean, it's pretty. But as we'll see in this episode, this is we're back to that. We're dealing with mystical characters, so we're very broad. You know, it's like this little piggy in a lot of ways, so we'll see. He has her recite this incantation while her magic energies blast at the Annihilator.
"By the power of Zeus, free his essence from this vessel and open the path to power."
Yeah, pretty good at that. Nothing happens, so Tala looks at the mirror and Faust's spirit is gone. She turns back and he's floating before her, looking a lot like the classic Starman Foe the Mist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because he's got the long hair and the balding pate up top, and he's in a smoky, non-corporeal form. So, I guess this spell also exchanges whoever is near for their spot in the mirror.
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Or whoever, you know, says the incantation.
Yeah.
"This is really bad, isn't it?"
Yeah. I think these kind of lines make the Lugosi accent work. She's, like I said, she's clearly putting some of this on. It's leaning, like I said, it's leaning into that little piggy vibe. And we'll see more of that in this episode. Yeah. They amp up the ridiculousness of all this mystic stuff. It's almost at the camp level.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. I mean, it's close, but it's not there.
Okay. I mean, this isn't as goofy as this.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's not. But the characters are kind of, you know, and we'll get to that in a minute. But so, of course, Faust takes possession of the Annihilator with his misty face taking over the armored plating in the head. He walks over to the mirror and both Tala and the audience think he's going to smash the mirror.
Yeah.
But he just straightens it. And then he busts out of the dungeon, which is then revealed to be in Cadmus's headquarters, which we saw in Doomsday Sanction.
What do you think about them giving her stone walls and stuff inside there? I'm like, okay.
She's like, if I'm going to do this, I have to have the right setting. You know? It's like, you know, General Eiling's like, wait a minute, why didn't I get more soldiers? I demanded there be more. I wanted another tank. And Waller's like, I'm sorry. I had to take the money for your tank and move part of a castle over from from Scotland from Transylvania to, you know. To
Romania.
Yeah. So, so there is a lot to unpack in this opening. We fully meet Tala, who only had small cameos in the previous two episodes. We learn of her relationship with Felix, what happened to Felix after we last saw him in Paradise Lost, and of course we pick up the story of the Annihilator, but it's done so well, it doesn't feel like too much exposition.
No.
It doesn't feel like, this is how you do it, people.
Exactly.
This is how this is good writing, this is how you keep a storyline going without just, you know, talking heads. It's interesting.
I mean, it's not 5 pages of exposition. It's not like Into the Heart of Darkness by Conrad, who spent 25 pages telling you it was dark and wet.
Yeah, right.
Like, good Lord. I will never get over that.
Yeah. Ooh, high school literature class. So after the credits, we move to the Watchtower and Flash and Wonder Woman sitting down to dinner in the commissary. This is the only time the creative team acknowledge Flash's absence last season, when Diana says she can't remember the last time they had to catch up. And Flash says, mostly my fault. I've been pretty busy in Central City. So, there you go. That's his reason why Flash wasn't around.
But again, good storytelling. It gives you the answer, you know, what's going on.
Even though Flash has been in this season quite a bit, it's still, you know, it's still good that they did it. We see several friends sitting together eating. Vigilante and Shining Knight are together. Fire and Ice are together. And the Atom and Dr. Light, which they're not, you know, historically a combo, but it makes sense because this heroic version of Dr. Light, Kimio Hoshi, is a scientist just like Ray Palmer.
Mm-hmm. So they have things to talk about.
Right. Did you see how much food Flash had on his tray?
Yes, he had like 20 hamburgers.
Yeah, I love that little bit. He's still got the super metabolism here. But then, awkward, Shire walks up having been invited by Flash to eat with him as well. And I like how he tries to play it off that this was not planned to get these two to bury the hatchet, or the mace, if you will.
Yeah.
Is it Tuesday? Silly me, making dinner plans with two beautiful women on the same night? And Diana's response is, Shire politely tries to walk away, saying,
we can do this another time.
Yeah, but Wally isn't going to let this go. Don't be ridiculous. We can all have a meal together. It's a chance for us to get reacquainted. Patch things up. Diana coldly responds,
assuming we want to.
Man, she's playing the frosty bit over the top, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, she's back in the league. They made the decision to let her back in the league, so get over it.
Yeah, I mean, they never voted her out because Superman voted to keep her in.
Right, but what I'm saying.
So, I don't think she, I think she needs to...
Chill.
Yeah, honestly, this isn't a good look for Wonder Woman, honestly. I mean, I know, that's over and done with, and as it should be. Flash says that's the kind of thing they're not going to do anymore, then offers, I always thought the reason you two don't get along is that you're too much alike. Ooh. Uh-huh. The women both respond in unison.
Like her?
Yeah. Then there's absolute silence.
Yeah.
Flash says that they can at least talk to each other. Then Shire mentions the pasta's good. And then Diana says it's the sauce. They can't even agree on that.
No.
So, yeah. They both sit there for a bit and Shire says,
this isn't going to work, is it?
And then Diana says,
not a chance.
And both walk off in different directions. Flash pleads with them to try, but they storm out. We see that Aztec has joined Fire and Ice at their table for some reason. I don't know why. Then everyone in the commissary is awkwardly staring at him, and he says something which I'd like to discuss. I had dinner with two women at the same time because I'm a stud. So clearly, Wally was doing this to try and get his two friends to be friends again.
Yes.
But he's masking it with his old, I'm a horn dog routine.
Yeah.
So why do you think he keeps that persona up?
I think it's just one of those cases. They saw him crash and burn, so he goes back. He just falls back onto what he's used to doing.
Right, right.
I think that's what it is.
Because, I mean, Flash has grown beyond
that.
Yeah,
but I'm saying, you know, everybody was watching him, and he, you know, you fall back into what you're used to.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's what a case.
And he said that in the Ties That Bind episode, no one took him seriously. But things like this, it's no wonder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he then puts his hand in mashed potatoes and licks them off his glove. Walking down the halls, Wonder Woman then sees Jean trying to calm a distressed Jason Blood, who is changing back and forth into his Etrigan, the demon form. He talks about the gates of Tartarus swinging both ways and says, "Usurper, fiend!" And then he gets stuck in half Jason, half Etrigan form. It's kind of freaky looking, like Two-Face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. Etrigan is voiced once again by Michael T. Weiss, best known as the lead in the 90s TV series The Pretender. He voiced him in Justice League Season 2 episodes A Night of Shadows Part 1 and 2. Etrigan appeared mostly as a baby in last season's Kid Stuff.
Yes, the best episode.
Yeah, but only had one line when he changed back to an adult, and Kevin Conroy did that one.
Right.
When he said, "Mommy." Jean shows that all their members with mystical powers are in agony and also strapped down to tables. We see Dr. Fate and Zatanna, who says something backwards. According to IMDb, what she says is, "All is lost. Faust sits on the throne of hell."
Oh, okay. I was wondering what she said.
Yeah. Zatanna is voiced here by Juliet Landau, not by Jennifer Hale, but you can't blame them for recasting her for this episode for one line.
Oh, yeah.
I like Etrigan and Kid Stuff. Although it kind of makes you wonder why somebody else didn't just voice Etrigan, and Michael T. Weiss must have been like, "That's it? Oh, man, I'm getting paid for this?" You know, it's just like, I read like two lines and I get paid. Diana asks what they can do, and John says he's researching it. Diana puts her hand on the glass and looks at Zatanna, very worried. I think that's a very subtle callback to this little piggy.
I mean, you think about it. She's in pain, and Zatanna helped her when she was, you know,
turned into a pig.
Pig, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, despite the fact that it was Batman, you know, going to his ex-girlfriend to save his current girlfriend, basically.
Right.
Diana enters her room to see a silhouetted figure in the dark. She thinks it's the Flash. But if it was the Flash, it would probably be Jay Garrick, not Wally West.
Which makes me wonder, I mean, think about it. How old is Diana? Has she been in our world before? Mm. I mean, you know, think about that. What would be her frame of reference? That's something to think about.
Oh, I think in the episode she thinks it's Wally. But that's just me thinking that Jay Garrick actually looks like Hermes or Mercury.
Well, yeah. Also true. But I think I've lived with you long enough that that's where my brain went.
You're thinking about, like, how Wonder Woman, like Hippolyta was Wonder Woman back when they,
yeah,
in the retcon and all that,
yeah,
stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. he's eating a banana. Grapes would have probably been too cliche.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he says, no. He's got a mouth full of banana. It's the original speedster. This is Hermes, messenger of the gods. And Diana bows to him and asks how she may serve him. He says, don't be so formal, Diana. You're practically a member of the family.
Mm.
Yeah.
And stick a pin in that statement, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And he pulls her chin up. Hermes is voiced by Jason Bateman, probably best known for Arrested Development and a ton of other highly successful TV and film projects in the last decade or so. But he'll always be the lead in Teen Wolf 2 to me.
No,
not really. This is one of his earliest voiceover roles. But he had a big hit with Disney's Zootopia as the Fox Nick Wilde.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess they're doing a sequel to that. So.
I think so.
Yeah. That's a good movie. He has a message for her, and it's pretty important because Zeus paid for overnight service. We're working, again, that whole Bewitched-style humor,
right,
again. Or maybe it's more influenced by Disney's Hercules.
Yeah, true.
Because Paul Schaefer was Hermes in that, you know.
Yeah.
The scroll he initially hands Diana reads, "For a good time, call Pedemonis."
Oh, dear.
She is a fellow messenger of the gods, better known as Iris. Hey, the speedster is into a gal named Iris. I think I got a shot. It's her cell number. This is how they're handling these Greek mythology figures. They have fully adopted the trappings of man's world and have kept up with the times, except for the fashion.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. They're still wearing
the togas.
They're still wearing togas, yeah.
Well, Well, maybe they're going to some college party.
Yeah, there you go. The scroll he meant to give her reads, "By decree of Zeus, father of Olympus, it is so ordered, Diana the Themyscira will travel to Tartarus and set right that which has been disturbed." And Diana says,
"He's telling me to go to..."
Basically. Yeah. I like that. Hermes tells Diana Felix Faust is on the loose again, and she says he's dead. And he answers, "Yes," and pretty upset about it, too. So that was another nice little line. He then relates how Faust possessed the Annihilator and made a beeline for the gates of Tartarus, which it was established to be underneath Themyscira before. Of course, we get to see this while he's telling Diana about it, swatting Amazons around, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
Hermes tells Diana she must defeat Faust and put Hades back on the throne of Tartarus. Diana asks why she should bother since they both deserve each other. And then he says, "You mean other than the direct order from the gods thing?" So I think that's kind of like, it's like, oh, these are the Greek gods, honey. We don't tell them no. You know,
right. Basically.
Yeah, it's like, then he tells her.
But at the same time, I've always tried to figure out, why do the gods have other people do their bidding when they are powerful? Why didn't they just go up against them?
Yeah, but I mean, in the mythology, they didn't, you know.
But I'm just saying, you know, it's just showing, okay.
Yeah. Hey, as goofy as sometimes the gods can be on here, it could be Russell Crowe and Thor Love and Thunder. That was bad. I'm sorry, people. That was goofy as hell. I mean, I liked aspects of that movie, but the more I think about it, I'm like, what the hell were that? That's a case where you let a director, after they direct the first movie,
yeah,
you'll cut them loose, and then they just do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
And that part was goofy. I'm sorry. I mean, that was just, and I mean, the bad Italian stereotype accent.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just bad. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Then he tells her there must always be a balance between order and chaos, which I guess is tying the Olympian gods into the Lords of Order and Chaos thing that DC has.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the reason the magic heroes are dying, because, you know, Dr. Fate directly works for Lords of Order and Chaos. Hey, I wonder if Hawk and Dove should have been in there.
Yeah.
Because they are like,
they're agents.
They're agents, yeah. So, yeah. Notice that he goes for an apple while he's in her room, too. So it kind of makes me wonder if he's got a metabolism.
Wasn't like Flash,
yeah. He's kind of flirty with Diana, but she doesn't seem to mind. So what do you think of Hermes here?
Are all speedsters horn dogs?
Light Ray slapped her in the butt.
That's right.
He's a new god.
I'd have cut it off.
He tells her they're in good hands and kind of phases out at super speed, just like the Flash in the Legends of the Superheroes TV specials.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't afford to do actual special effects of him running. Diana grabs a shield from the wall and almost grabs a sword. This was before Wonder Woman was constantly seen with a shield and a sword. So instead, she goes down the hall where she passes Gypsy and Booster Gold, then knocks on Shire's door, but just once. She calls her name, and when no one answers, she orders the door lock overridden.
Which is abusing her power big time.
Yeah, and she says her code is 003.
Right.
Which, you know, means 001 is Superman and 002 is Batman.
Or vice versa,
but probably 001 Superman.
Hmm.
Yeah. I wonder what the destruct code is when they have to blow up the watchtower.
Oh, three. Mm.
00 destruct. 0. She then walks in to take her mace.
Yeah.
I mean, she's going to steal her mace. Now, in this continuity, and this is brought up later in this episode, Diana stole her armor from the Amazon. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but come on. I know that mace is magic, but you should have at least asked her first.
Yes.
I mean, you know, come on. It's, you know, it. So Diana is not above the 5-finger discount.
No.
You know, I mean, you know, all the world is waiting for her, but they're probably waiting for her to go into a 7-Eleven and steal a Snickers bar or something. I don't know.
Oh, maybe she'd be better off. You know, Snickers satisfies.
That's right. You're not being yourself lately. You know,
yeah.
Yeah. Shire catches her in the act. Diana explains she needed it and would bring it back. And then Shire says,
"We become pals while I wasn't looking?"
Yeah, that line, like, what part of this makes sense to you? You know, you and me are not chummy enough for you to walk into my room and take my stuff.
Yeah.
You know, especially that.
We are not college roommates. Back off, chick.
Right. You're not wearing my tracksuit.
Yeah.
Which I noticed in this episode, I don't think I ever noticed it before, because Shara, you know, as Hawk Girl, had the big helmet.
Mm-hmm.
But now without it, she's like almost a foot shorter than Diana. Did you notice that?
No, I hadn't.
She's like at least half a foot shorter than her.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they
but Diana also has on big heels, too.
That's true, too. And she's got on tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sneakers.
So you got to take that into account.
Or running shoes, I guess.
Yeah. So probably the difference is only maybe 3 or 4 inches.
I don't know in my who's who off the top of my head how tall they're supposed to be. Yeah. I know Hawkman's really tall. He's like 6'6" or something, like Kadar.
Yeah.
Is tall. And that's why the superpowers figure's tall.
Bigger, yeah.
They made them to scale. But I can't, you know, I don't know. So, I'm sorry, I'm getting lost in the weeds.
Yeah. Let's go. Come on.
Diana tells her a little about what's happening on Themyscira, and Shiera says it must be pretty bad for her to resort to this. Diana asks again, but Shiera says,
"It's a package deal. You want the mace? You get me, too."
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I don't blame her. Flying in the invisible jet, Diana says, "You're doing this because you want to prove yourself to me, aren't you?" "Well, you don't have to." And she says she forgave her a long time ago.
Manure.
Yeah, that is a load of crap.
Yeah.
She's got a grudge the size of a small planet.
I think it's bigger than a small one.
Yeah. And I love what Shiera says to her.
"Did I ever ask you for your forgiveness?"
Ooh. I mean.
It's like, screw you, lady.
Miss High and Mighty. Yeah. The Amazons and Hippolyta are trying to hold the demons from escaping through the gates. But one breaks free, Diana flies in to take it out, but her mom gives her a grief about the gods, decreeing she can't set foot on the island. This is from letting the League men do the same in Paradise Lost, mm-hmm. which you and I had a real problem with
yeah.
in that episode. So, Shiera starts to give it back to her, but Hippolyta scolds her for saying,
"The gods are decreeing stuff all the time around here, ma'am."
Yeah, because she gives her a look and she's like, "Ma'am."
It's like, ooh, I got in trouble with a mom.
Yeah. Hippolyta is voiced once again by Susan Sullivan, best known for Falcon Crest and Dharma and Greg. Hey, we had Alan Rachins on here last week, and he was Dharma's dad. I think she was Greg's mom.
I think.
Diana says she's going in through the gates despite her mother's protests, and then Hippolyta says,
"You must have access to your full power."
Say what?
I know. Who knew? "Because you stole your armor and lasso, you were never told of all the power they possess."
See, shoplifting is wrong, kids. I mean, I'm just saying.
Are you the only one? I mean, am I the only one that actually had the theme song run through their head?
"And the power you possess."
"And the power you possess."
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I couldn't help it as soon as she said that.
Yeah, I mean, if they could have used the Wonder Woman theme when she touched it.
Yes.
Dun, 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 dun,
yeah.
You know, because they do on Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
Very effectively when she's on the Brave and the Bold cartoon. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But she touches the star on her tiara. And her bracelets, lasso, and I'm saying girdle because I'll usually call it a belt, but it's usually called the girdle of...
Yeah.
It's like Hippolyta's girdle or something.
Or something, yeah.
So I'm calling it the girdle here based on like the George Perez books and the Golden Age comics. You know, the belt around her waist. It all glows.
Yes.
And she tells her she'll know what to do when the time comes. In other words, they're saving that for kick-ass hero moments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, yeah. Hippolyta tells Shiera to bring her daughter back to her. And she responds that there's nothing to worry about. She's almost as good at kicking butt as I am. So that's a high compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they fly through the gates, fight some demons, but they get spooked. But the demons get spooked by Shiera's wings. She tells them they don't want to mess with her boss, and she points upstairs.
Yeah.
Which I like. They're mixing theologies here, but hey, it was a funny gag.
Yeah.
So Diana and Shiera disagree on a plan of action. Diana wants to find Faust. Shiera is puzzled and said they need to free Hades first. Diana says Hades can take care of himself, and she's not there to help him. Shiera calls her out on this since her mission is to put him back on the throne. And she says whatever he's guilty of, we have a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Diana says she wouldn't think of this if she was there in Paradise Lost and knew what Hades had done to her and her mother. And, you know, Shire's telling her, you know, you need to be practical and that they'll need Hades to bring Faust down. Diana says,
"I don't even need your help."
Yeah. This is Diana from Hawk and Dove all over again.
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, not herself.
She's in a mood.
Yeah.
I mean, all this is just, you know, dealing with the Shiera thing this morning and then finding out she's got to go back to her banished home world, deal with Hades, who's a creep. You know,
yeah.
I mean, she's just in a mood. So, I mean, you can understand it, you know, but Shiera is the even-tempered.
I know.
Tempered once saying, you know, to her, "I don't need my help." She said, "Yes, you do." And that she'll back up whatever play she decides on. Now, that's some character growth. from the early seasons of this show. I think, I know, like we said, Diana has her reasons, but I think Diana has regressed in some ways, maybe hardened by man's world.
Yeah, I think so.
Optimism in the naivete she had when she first arrived has been replaced by kind of like Jean in a way.
Yeah.
Their time in man's world has kind of taken away that
innocence.
In some ways. Yeah. And
it's taken away some of their ideology.
Right.
So, and how they look at it.
Yeah, I think so too. Diana chooses to go after Faust, and Shiera knows how to find him. She approaches three demons fighting over a bone near a chasm of fire, and are actually roasting the meat on the bone over the fire. She takes one of the demons into the air. These are the old Justice League of America comic villains known as the Demons Three, Abnegazer, Wrath, and Ghast. But they look particularly Gollum-like here.
Yeah.
They're very Gollum-like. The one she flies off with, Abnegazer, is voiced by Wayne Knight, of course best known as...
Hello, boys.
Ow!
From Seinfeld, but also as the Weasley Dennis Nedry from Jurassic Park.
Right.
Yeah. Diana and Shiera demand to know where Faust is, and Abnegazer taunts them. When Shiera threatens him, he responds, and his response is hilarious. Or what? You'll kill me? Gosh, I might end up suffering eternal torment as punishment for my sins. Oh, wait, I already am. this is kind of similar to the Medusa gag from This Little Piggy.
Ring a ding ding.
Yeah, yeah, 300 years off my sentence or whatever. You know, I'll get out in 30 something or whatever she says. Yeah. So. And then Wonder Woman says she wants to try something, and she uses the lasso of truth to make him tell them that Faust is in Hades' library. He even agrees to lead them there. Of course, Wonder Woman's lasso of truth is one of her main, things from the comic, part of her mythology, but this is the first time we've ever seen it on this show. Before, her lasso was just incredibly elastic and strong for some reason.
Right.
It glows, too. And it glows, too, yeah. Yeah, it would have been nice to have had this in previous seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So. I love the exchange that follows. Shiera says,
"How'd you do that?"
And Diana responds,
"Magic lasso. Who knew?"
And Shiera says,
"If you don't want to tell me, fine."
And Diana even smirks at this.
Yeah.
I like that bit. That's nice. Yeah, yeah. When Shiera asks if there's anything else they should know, Abnegazer tells them they really shouldn't go in there, and then asks Diana to remove the rope. "I'm a demon. The truth hurts." And that's all we get from that guy, but... They go into the library, and the torches in the library are actually burning skeletons.
I know!
I mean, like, full skeletons, just, like, attached to the wall on fire. Which
you talk about Nefiri.
Yeah, yeah. They pass the shelves of books, and Shiera decides to pull one out. It's a book that appears to be bound in flesh with a face. The eyes open, and spooked, she throws it to the floor. It's the freaking Necronomicon from the Evil Dead franchise.
Oh, has to be.
Oh, yeah. That's what this is. It looks just like it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely the Necronomicon. I'm surprised it didn't bite her hand or something. They find Faust at a desk leafing through a book. He knows they're there without even turning around. He then goes on about what he's found, the Lost Scrolls of Herculaneum, Mervlin's Juvenalia, and Pierre Menard's Don Quixote. I had to look that last one up because Don Quixote, as most know it, was written by Miguel de Cervantes. There was a short story by Jorge Luis Borges about a fictional author named Menard who rewrote Don Quixote. This postulates that this version is real and in hell. That's a deep cut.
Wow.
And I don't even know why that would particularly be in hell.
Right.
You know, I mean, what's so demonic about Don Quixote that I don't remember tilting at windmills, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't... But he says dark tomes that make the Necronomicon look like a children's book. So I guess that's why he didn't pull the Necronomicon off the shelf.
Right.
Yeah, so Klaatu, Virata, necktie or something, you know. Shiera asks why anyone would want this dump, and Faust explains he took it over to get revenge on Hades for betraying him. But Hades tried to make a bargain by telling him about the library. He took the knowledge but continued with the revenge. And then he says, "But now I'm in heaven, figuratively speaking." And I know you had to appreciate what Shiera said.
Yes. We're revoking your library card.
Yeah, as somebody that used to work at a library. I know. It's like a children's librarian. So. oh, you want to fight? Not in the mood. I like the fact that he's just like, okay, I'm not.
I don't have time.
I've got all these great books. I don't have time for you. You're Justice
League. I've actually wanted to do this to you before when I've been trying to read a book and you've wanted to talk to me. If I could just wave you somewhere else, it'd be nice. I mean that lovingly.
Thanks. Well, we just saw Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and I'm not really giving away anything, but when they, you know, Star-Lord is, like, waiting to talk to the High Evolutionary, and he just sticks his finger up, like, just wait. puts him on hold, basically, with a finger. That's kind of what he's doing here.
Yeah.
But he sends him away through this, it's like the earth from the ground comes up, pulls him into the air, and then pulls him back down.
Yeah.
Through a portal, say.
I really wouldn't send you away. You realize that, right?
Yeah, I know. Okay. Not really, though. He's got, you know, he's got all that powerful armor, and it's like an evil male you, basically. Yeah. I said an evil you. I didn't just say a male you. So, you know, they get dumped into snowy land cape, and Shire is shivering in her sleeveless tracksuit. And I know we're redoing a lot of the dialogue on this one, but I got Cindy here, and it's really funny. So I gotta do it. Shire says,
"Aren't you cold in that outfit?"
And Diana answers,
"Not really."
Shire says,
"Of course not. The princess doesn't get cold. The princess doesn't even sweat in the fire pits of Tartarus."
What'd she say?
"I do too sweat. Please, you glow. I wouldn't be surprised if you never have to."
What do you think she was saying there? You never have to, like, use the bathroom?
I don't know.
I don't know. I think that's what she was going to say. You never have to poop, basically. Yeah. You know, just like... Yeah, I like that, you know, Shiera's got this picture of Diana.
Right.
That, you know, she's this perfect...
She's a perfect little princess.
She's a perfect princess because Shiera, they're both warriors, but Shiera's this, hard scrabble, you know, beer guzzling, belching, getting to a bar fight type.
Yeah.
And, you know, Diana's literally royalty.
Yeah.
I mean, they've both been trained to be warriors, but they're still from two different walks of life. Mm-hmm. Then they hear screaming and find Hades being picked at by vultures. Diana frees him, despite thinking the vultures weren't good enough for him.
Yeah.
Hades is voiced here by Bob Joles, who is best known as the dad on Big City Greens now, but also voiced J. Jonah Jameson in the 2017 to 2020 Spider-Man animated series. John Rhys Davies had voiced the character in Paradise Lost. But he does a pretty good John Rhys Davies impersonation.
Right.
I mean, he sounds like him. If you had told me that was John Rhys Davies, I would have believed it.
Okay. So.
Diana says,
"If it were up to me, but even this place needs order."
Shire comments, "Faust doesn't care what happens here." And Hades says, "No one ever appreciates your work until you're gone." True enough. Uh-huh. Hades teleports them away. Then we cut to the library, and Faust smells something, which is kind of weird considering he doesn't have a real nose and he's just a spirit. A spirit, but
yeah.
Shire is burning his books.
And I know they're bad books. I realize that. But just the idea of the library in flames just made me go so... I know they're bad books. I know that.
Yeah.
But they're the books. I know. It's the library. And it made my heart hurt.
Even in hell, you shouldn't burn books.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. This gives Hades and Diana a distraction to start pounding on Faust and knock him down. Diana says she knows the secret of the armor, which if she knows it, why is she hitting it?
Right.
But it's fueled by rage. So if they don't fight, it stops. He then smacks Diana across the room, telling her that was before he fixed it. Uh-oh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He then uses magic to bring the flaming skeletons alive, which is really cool looking.
Yeah.
Fighting skeleton warriors are always cool. It's even more cool when they're on fire. Just ask Ray Harryhausen, you know.
Well, what about in Evil Dead 2 or 3 or whenever he goes back to the past?
Oh, the 3, know? Yeah, in the Army of Darkness.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you got to go with, you know, Jason the Argonaut. And the skeletons, you know.
Also, mythology, da da da. But yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Especially when we also have the Necronomicon reference earlier,
True.
So.
That's true, yeah. Shire gets to go to town with her mace because they're skeletons, so she gets to just knock them apart. It's really cool. Faust mummifies Diana with a blaster with some magic thing, and she's wrapped up like a mummy. And then he blasts Hades with energy. But Shire throws a flaming skull at him, and she tells him her mace disrupts magic. And then she asks,
"What's that tin suit run on again?"
Yeah. Activate the magic mace meter.
Oh, honey, the whole top of it goes off, you know. If you were at the carnival, I mean, it would just be, poing,
right.
The belt fall off.
But like we said, they finally explained that it disrupts magic.
Yes.
That it's made of this nth metal. It took out, you know, Cthulhu or whatever the Cthulhu demon was
Critter
named.
Was.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's okay. Yeah, we know that now. So Shara actually cracks the armor's chest, but Faust grabs her, making her drop the mace. You actually hurt me. Allow me to return the favor. He then starts squeezing her.
Yeah.
And in a scene very reminiscent of the later Avengers Endgame, Diana picks up the mace and says,
I hit a lot harder than she does.
Yeah. And she comes at him, but Faust blasts at her, but she uses the mace to push through the blast, kind of Fleischer Superman style, yeah, and wallops him. She then jumps on him and smashes the mace into the armor's face. Faust screams and the Annihilator explodes,
yep,
into tiny little bits. But yeah, I couldn't help but think of, you know, the moment in Endgame that, you know, my yeah moment when Cap has Mjolnir. And yes, again, if nobody, I did jump out of my seat in the theater and go, yeah! Yeah, when that scene happened in the movie.
Oh, yes, you did.
We had a really good crowd. Everybody was into it. Nobody was overly obnoxious with it. But I did do that, and I don't regret it. And if you don't like it, I don't care. Because that was my absolute favorite moment, single moment in a movie theater ever. It is. So there. We then get a POV shot of Shiera waking up. Diana helps her up, and she tells her that the mace protected her, but she was worried about Shiera. And she says,
you're all sweaty.
And she responds, told you. That's a nice callback, and the first time either lent an actual hand to each other in this episode. Hades laments the loss of his library, but he grabs Faust's tiny soul and says he has a new hobby, tormenting Faust's pathetic soul. When he grabs his little soul, it reminds me of the first live-action Scooby-Doo movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when their little souls are moving around and they switch their bodies and you know, and all that stuff.
Okay, yeah.
That's what it reminds me of. Yeah. He then asks Diana if she has a problem with that, and he calls her my child, and she responds,
have a party, but don't call me my child again, or you'll get what he got.
Then Hades drops a potential bombshell on Diana. He claims to be her father. When Diana says she doesn't have one and her mother sculpted her from clay, then breathed life into her, he says that he and Hippolyta sculpted her together.
Is that a new euphemism?
I don't know. It's like the scene in Ghost, you know. When he met her in Paradise Lost, he realized that Hippolyta must have breathed life into the sculpt after he was condemned to Tartarus. Shiera says he's lying, and they can prove it with the lasso. Diana says that the real truth is it doesn't matter, and then she knows what she needs to know, like I said in the synopsis, who raised her, what she was raised to do, and they just walk away from him.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of this? Was he telling the truth? This was before the whole Daughter of Zeus thing they recently added to Wonder Woman's mythos. So do you think he really was there? I mean, what do you think?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, it would explain why Diana has anger issues.
Well, that's true, too.
You know?
Why this version of Wonder Woman's a little more than some versions. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The gates of Tartarus are locked again. The Amazons cheer. And Diana thanks her mother for unlocking her powers. And she tells him she earned them a long time ago. And she says she was too stubborn to admit it. Hell yeah, you were.
Uh-huh.
And then she invites Diana and Shiera to stay and rest and then share a meal with her. Diana reminds her that she had been banished by the gods. And she says,
this is your home and I'm your mother. If the gods don't like it, they'll have to take it up with me.
Yeah. You tell them, girl, but it's about damn time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know.
Long time coming.
Yeah, it is. And then I love the last little exchange. Diana says,
what about us? Are we good?
And Shiera says,
like oil and vinegar, we go together, but we don't mix. So is she salad dressing now?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Well, Caesar was a salad dressing dude.
And
we are a Greek, you know, we are in Greek civilization here. Diana says, works for me, and the two fly off together. So did this resolution work for you?
Yeah. I mean, it did. I mean, it's one of those cases you have two strong, opinionated women. Neither one of them is actually going to come out and apologize to each other. It's kind of like, you know, okay, we're just going to move past it.
Right.
You know, there no words are going to be spoken.
Right.
You know?
It's just from this point on, we're not going to mention it again, and you and I are going to get along.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I want to know. I mean, from a female perspective, does that track for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're obviously a strong-willed female.
It's one of those cases. I mean, I come at it, a lot of women won't apologize. They won't. They'll just act like, you know, they'll just move on to something else. But I come at it more, honestly, when I have a conflict with anybody, whether they're male or female, you know this. I mean, we've lived together for almost 30 years. If I'm pissed at you, I'm going to like, this is why I'm pissed. This is what needs to happen to make it better for me. And I lay it out. But most women won't do that. They're like, you know, they'll just act like it didn't happen and want you to sweep it under the rug. I don't want it to happen again, so here's what happens. And I do that with, you know, my fellow female coworkers, colleagues, friends. I'm like, okay, this is what happened. This is why I'm pissed. Let's fix this. But a lot of women don't do that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Okay, well, I think Hippolyta showing she could forgive and admit she was being bullheaded and stubborn helped Diana do the same a little bit because, you know, I mean, she is, you know, her mother obviously, you know, she says, you know, she knows who raised her. Her mother's very influential on her life. So when she sees that Hippolyta's willing to drop the banishment, mm-hmm. you know, put that behind
her. She actually says, you earned them a long time ago. I was just too stubborn to admit it.
Right.
But how many years did that take for her to come around to that?
Yeah. Well, it was in Justice League Season 1. I don't know in real time, but it's been like, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, well-earned season. So, it's been like 3 years. Yeah. Yeah. I think that combined with the fact that Shiera did come to help her.
Yes.
I mean, I know she was kind of like, well, you can't have the mace without me. But she did could have just told her, no, I ain't going with you. You know, find somebody else to go. I think the two of those things kind of like melted her, the stick up her butt, basically. It's just like, for lack of a better okay. term. So let's get into our superlatives here.
Power action feature.
So for power action feature, what did you, what was your moment for power action feature?
Oh, I mean, you know, when Diana whoops the crap out of Faust.
With the mace?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be. It's the, you know, the end game moment. Yeah. The worthy moment. Yeah. Of course, you know, anybody can lift Shiera's mace. It's not like it's Mjolnir.
No.
But it's still, and she, you know what I mean? That mace in Wonder Woman's hands would be more powerful. It's kind of like in the Avengers, JLA Avengers crossover when Superman's got Cap, Shield, and Mjolnir.
Right.
And it's like, oh, God, Superman's got those.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, it's like, wow. So.
Rotating chairperson.
Rotating chairperson. I mean, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's Diana.
This is Wonder Woman's episode.
Oh, yeah.
Shiera has a good showing, too, but. It's Wonder Woman's episode.
Justice League Communicator.
Justice League Communicator, what was your favorite exchange in this one or line?
Oh, God. There's too many. I mean, it's just doo doo
doo doo doo doo doo. Yeah, and I know. I definitely copy too many into the our script this time. But, there was a lot of good banter back and forth.
Yeah, I'm just going to say just the banter between them.
Yeah, I think the I Do Too Sweat exchange is probably my favorite. I mean, because, like, again, it shows that although Flash said they're a lot alike, they are different because, you know, Shiera looks at her like, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, just by, you know, it is kind of hard to say because in the animation form, the way they're drawn, they're both beautiful.
Right.
Obviously, they make a big deal out of the fact that when, you know, Green Lantern finally took her helmet off, you're like, oh, man, she's hot.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you know, but there's like beautiful and then there's like Wonder Woman beautiful. You know, there's Linda Carter, Gal Gadot, beautiful, you know. And it's like that kind of untouchable kind of like, you're just freaking perfect, aren't you? You know, it's kind of like that what Tony said to Steve Rogers, like, you know, it's you and your perfect teeth. You know, that that type of thing, which his teeth aren't perfect because we saw his fillings in the original trailer for Infinity War that they had to take out. But anyway, I like that bit. It's like, you know, even though Shiera is like, you know, obviously, you know, she's super capable woman. She's obviously very beautiful and everything, you know, even from a male gaze kind of way. It's.
Let me ask you this. You said that about Captain America and Iron Man. Don't you think that's kind of the same relationship? You have Iron Man that is a self-made person versus Captain America whose powers were given to him.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And that kind of, that snark and kind of like, I can never be what you are.
Right.
You know,
because yeah. Wonder Woman was born with her powers and was given, you know, with the suit and everything, whereas Captain America was given his powers by medicine, you know, by the experiment, whereas both Iron Man and Shiera got it through pluck.
Right,
you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Shire has the natural wings.
Right, but
as far as being a capable warrior and being tough and everything, that's true.
And
developed
their talents and stuff. And yes, Tony had money, but Shire had the wings. So, you know, there's parallels.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Comic connections.
For comic connections, there's not anything direct, but we do get, of course, Felix Faust and Tala. You know, those are pretty deep cuts, and of course Faust is a big Justice League villain in the comics,
right.
And he was even involved with the Demons 3 at different times over the years, so seeing them in the story, even though they're not tied to him, was a nice touch.
Yeah.
You know, it's just another one of those cases where they pulled from the bench and it really worked.
Electricity is evil.
Shire uses her charged mace to burn the books, even the hellish ones, which, like, you know, it is evil. You know, if you're burning books, it's evil.
Yeah.
Even in hell, like we said. So what did you think of this one overall?
Oh, I mean, I liked it. It was, you know, the interplay between the different characters and everything, you know, all of that stuff. And you got to see, like I said, where those characters develop. You have somebody that is self-made versus somebody that was born that way and how those mesh. And they have to figure out a way to work together.
Yeah. And I mean, the history, this has been building again since Starcrossed. So to kind of finally put this, and it's a good thing to, because the Justice League is going to need to all be on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
what's coming.
I mean, we found that, you know, Batman's thinking in a different direction, possibly. Of course, we know that he really doesn't. But, you know, at one time they were planning on going in that direction. So they would need even more to be, the rest of them to be together,
mm-hmm.
and not be, you know, at odds at all. I think this is a very solid episode. I mean, compared to Doomsday Sanction and Task Force X, I think it's a bit weaker, but it's still really well written. It's very well acted, and it, like we said, it moves those characters forward. It takes the Annihilator off the table, so it's connected to the Cadmus arc.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny, the Suicide Squad went to all that trouble, and then one episode later it's destroyed.
Yeah.
So that'll do it for this one. Special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For information on how you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, visit patreon.com/FWPodcast.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club podcast, David Capone, and Rocket Dan Johnson, who specifically support JLUcast. Can one of you guys go to Tartarus and help Hades clean up the library? Just watch for the Necronomicon. I hear it bites.
Yeah. Hey guys, this is Chris cutting in during the editing again. I just wanted to say one of the cool things that our patrons gets to do is we have polls up on our patreon.com/FWPodcast site. So if you are a patron, you get to participate in these polls. And I asked a question a couple weeks ago, which side are you on with the Justice League versus Cadmus? And, you know, I basically asked a question, you know, how do you feel about this storyline? Do you side more with the Justice League? Do you see Cadmus's point? So I just wanted to run down the numbers here. Number one chosen option, and you could choose more than one because I made it to where you could choose more than one because this is a kind of a complicated thing. But the number one choice with 38% with Cadmus had a point, but they were misguided and crossed the line into wrong. The second highest number of votes went to I could see both sides and just enjoyed the story. Then that was 25%. 21% of our patrons said the Justice League overstepped boundaries they shouldn't have, but they were never a threat. Then from there we go to, this is a really interesting one, quite a few people, 13%, pretty high I thought. They said, I don't like to see my superheroes deconstructed this way. I was really surprised by that because this storyline is much beloved as far as I'm concerned. But apparently some people don't like their heroes deconstructed at all. So, well, there you go. Only getting 4% of the vote, the Justice League was justified in everything they did. I kind of think that's an unpopular opinion. I think the Justice League was meant to be shown that they had crossed the line somewhere. Maybe not as bad as Cadmus had thought, and they wouldn't cross the lines that Cadmus thought they would, but still. And then 0%, thankfully, said Cadmus was right and was justified in what they did to stop the league if necessary. But I thought these were very interesting because this is a a storyline that makes you stop and think. It puts the hero's actions into questions. It kind of makes you sometimes side with the villains like Task Force X did last time. So that's kind of the fun stuff you get to do if you support us on Patreon. Next time, it's the return of one of the show's greatest couples and the debut of who our patrons voted as their favorite couple in the DCAU. Join us for a double date. See you then.
Bye.
JLU Cast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Dad. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
You okay?
Yeah. Didn't think I'd need a jacket where we were going. Aren't you cold in that outfit?
Not really.
Of course not. The princess doesn't get cold. The princess doesn't even sweat in the fire pits of Tartarus.
I do too sweat.
Please, you glow. I wouldn't be surprised if you never have to...
Shaira? Your mace protected me from the worst of the explosion, but I was afraid you...
You're all sweaty.
Told you.